It's 2 o'clock, and this is Barbara Ridenour with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated June 3rd, 2016. We'll start today's reading on the front page with Exelon to close Clinton Power Plant. Clinton. Exelon Corporation will move forward with plans to close the Clinton and Quad Cities nuclear plants, company officials said Thursday, citing a lack of progress by state lawmakers on a subsidy plan they say is needed to save the two facilities. This is an extremely difficult day for the 1,500 employees who operate these plants safely and reliably every day, and the communities that depend on them for support, Exelon President and CEO Chris Crane said in a statement. Exelon had previously said it would close the Clinton plant on June 1, 2017, and the Quad Cities plant a year later if the General Assembly did not pass the Next Generation Energy Plan this spring. Its main provision would extend to nuclear plants state subsidies given to wind and solar power suppliers for the production of carbon-free electricity. Exelon said it could not sustain operating losses totaling a combined $800 million at the two plants over the past 7 years without the subsidies and some rate structure changes in the plan. Clinton and DeWitt County officials called the potential closure devastating because the Clinton Power Station pays $15 million in property taxes each year. About 700 people are employed there. The two plants support about 4,200 direct and indirect jobs and produce more than $1.2 billion in economic activity, according to Exelon estimates. Exelon officials said that they have begun taking necessary steps to shut down the two plants. Those will include notifying the Nuclear Regulatory Commission of the shutdowns within the next 30 days, terminating capital investment projects required of long-term operation of the plants, and canceling fuel purchases and outage planning. Exelon left open the slim possibility Thursday the closure decision could be reversed if talks move in a positive direction. The decision can be reversed, but only in narrow circumstances, and week by week, a reversal becomes more and more difficult, said spokesman Brett Nauman. As we've stated previously, legislation would have to be sufficient from an economic standpoint to warrant continued operation of the plant and in a time frame that would allow a reversal. Nauman said the company will continue working with stakeholders to reach a viable path forward for these important assets as long as possible while staying on the planned closure timeline. Crane's email to employees with the news on Thursday, obtained by the Associated Press, included a plea that workers call a listed telephone line and record a message for Governor Bruce Rauner and lawmakers in favor of the legislation. The recorded greeting urges callers to tell lawmakers that if they take action immediately, they may be able to stop the closures at the Clinton and Quad Cities plants and save your job. While the spring legislative session ended Tuesday, House Speaker Michael Madigan, Democrat of Chicago, said House members will meet every Wednesday through June. The bill has sparked a heated debate between environmental groups and supporters of the nuclear energy, with opponents calling the bill a bailout, and those in favor saying nuclear power offers a reliable alternative to coal plants that face tough new federal clear air standards. Michael Schellenberger, president of Environmental Progress, a California-based group that supports nuclear power, said Thursday, if Quad and Clinton are closed, Illinois will lose one quarter of all its clean energy, over 1,500 jobs, and its standing as a clean energy leader. It's not too late to save Quad and Clinton, said Schellenberger, adding that such a move will require moderate environmental groups to show courage and break from the dogmatically anti-nuclear groups that openly say they want to replace nuclear plants with natural gas. The Illinois Clean Jobs Coalition, a group of renewable energy and green companies with its own version of the legislation, said Wednesday that talks with Exelon have been productive, but more progress is necessary to arrive at a final agreement, including on the state's renewable portfolio standard and protecting Illinois consumers. Experts disagree on whether shutting the plants would raise the price of electricity. Exelon points to a 2015 state report that found that closing them could pump up regional wholesale energy prices by 47%. Excuse me. Dave Lundy, director of the BEST coalition opposing the plan, said price spikes are unlikely because of the amount of electricity produced in Illinois and the high cost to send it through jammed transmission lines to the Quad Cities. The coalition claims the Next Generation Energy plan would amount to an average of $3 per month rate hike for ratepayers and a $7.7 billion windfall for Exelon over 10 years. Exelon puts the increase to ratepayers at 25 cents a month in exchange for future power stability. Democratic Attorney General Lisa Madigan was unconvinced Thursday. Unfortunately, a highly profitable company is choosing to close its plants because it hasn't received a blank check to impose unfair and unnecessary rate hikes on Illinois consumers, Madigan said in a statement. Governor, lawmakers said, fight's not over. Bloomington. Area lawmakers and Governor Bruce Rauner expressed a commitment on Thursday to continue to work for an agreement to persuade Exelon to keep its nuclear plants open in Clinton and the Quad Cities. There is still time to do this, State Representative Dan Brady, Republican of Bloomington, said Thursday after Exelon's announcement it would close the Clinton plant June 1, 2017. State Senator Chapin Rose and State Representative Bill Mitchell, in whose districts the Clinton plant is located, expressed similar sentiments during a news conference on Thursday. Rauner, during a visit to East Moline Correctional Center, expressed hope that a solution can be found. I'm trying to work with Exelon to keep these plants open, he said. We need to protect those jobs. About 700 people work at the Clinton nuclear power plant. Legislation would provide subsidies for the plants. Has not been brought to a vote. Exelon said that the subsidies are essential for continued operation as it competes with other forms of energy. But Brady seemed to question whether the subsidies sought would work. I don't know if we can level the playing field in the arena of power enough, said Brady, in reference to the other forms of energy competing with nuclear power, including wind, solar, and natural gas. That's something that's driven by the market. Nevertheless, Brady said, I will do everything I can. Rauner placed the blame on an unwillingness by Illinois Democrats to act on tough votes, and Brady said the Speaker of the House, Democrat Michael Madigan, decides the flow of legislation. But a Democrat from the Quad City area, State Representative Mike Smitty of Hillsdale, called Rauner's commitment disingenuous and told the Quad City Times that he was willing to work for a compromise to make sure we do have a vote to keep that plant viable. Although this is primarily a state issue, federal lawmakers expressed concern and called on their state counterparts to act. U.S. Representative Adam Kinzinger, a Republican from Chanahan, said that he was deeply saddened by Exelon's announcement. In a statement issued Thursday, he urged quick action on a solution to ensure the rest of our nuclear fleet does not meet the same fate as that of the Quad Cities and Clinton plants. U.S. Representative Rodney Davis, a Republican from Taylorville, said in a statement, "It's time to set politics aside and find a solution that recognizes the benefits of nuclear energy and the economic opportunities it provides for our state." Exelon's announcement came 2 days after the final shift of workers left the Mitsubishi Motors auto assembly plant in Normal. This is another devastating blow in terms of jobs, coming right on the heels of Mitsubishi, said Brady. The Quad City Times contributed to this article. School community leaders brace for economic fallout from Clinton closure. On his way To a 7 a.m. meeting in the nuclear support annex, a big conference room with seating for all of the 700 employees of the Clinton Power Station, Christian Small, the manager of the reactor engineering group at the plant, knew what was coming. At that meeting, Brian Hansen, the president and chief nuclear officer at Exelon Nuclear Partners, announced the news that the employees had been preparing for over the course of the past year. The Clinton Nuclear Power Station would move forward with plans to shut down June 1, 2017, given the lack of progress on Illinois energy legislation. We tried to hold on to the hope that there would be some hope for us, but we all knew the closure was inevitable, Small said. The employees would be offered jobs at other Exelon nuclear sites, but that was little consolation Thursday morning. I went to the University of Illinois and had two internships at the plant before I was hired, Small said. The people that work here took me under their wing 15 years ago. The staff has been so supportive, and this plant has really been accepted by the community. It's a somber feeling. Small lives in Champaign, but 143 employees, or about 21% of the Exelon workforce, live in Clinton. This is devastating news to us, said Clinton Chamber of Commerce Executive Director Marion Brizard. We knew it was inevitable, but when I got a call this morning about 7 a.m., it was like a punch in the gut. Other local leaders and residents told similar stories. I was not surprised, but I was mad, said DeWitt County Board Chairman Dave Newberg. As we move forward, it will be very difficult. We are about to lose jobs in this county, good county employees. Our citizens are going to see reduced services from everything, including sheriff patrols. What type of effect is this going to have on the safety of our people? Business will be hurt. Property values will drop. The loss of 700 jobs is terrible. But when you take a county of 15,000 people and start totaling the jobs up that are affected by this, it's massive and it will not be good. I feel bad for the families that have to suffer through this job loss, said Clinton Mayor Roger Krulik. The city of Clinton will get by, but it's going to be hard. Clinton Public Safety Commissioner Dan Ballinger said he has concerns about police and fire protection in the city with the loss of that many jobs from the community. For the tax year 2014, the Clinton Power Station's tax payments to taxing districts totaled $13 million. With this type of cut among us, we will have to cut police staff, he said. They pay a sum to the fire department, and that helps keep our equipment up. But with that said, we have one of the oldest fire stations probably in the state. Just to cut people's safety, I'm concerned about that. When you take $14 million out of the economy, we are going to suffer. Clinton residents also were disappointed in the news, and many were worried what impact the closure of the plant would have on the city and county. Property taxes from the plant provide 43% of the property tax revenues of surrounding local governments, and in some localities, substantially more. The Clinton School District, for instance, currently receives $8.3 million, making up about 53% of the district's budget. As of now, we don't rely much on state aid. However, we're going to have to do more in the future, and that is scary, said Clinton Superintendent Kurt Nettles. We are extremely worried. Our community will have to determine what kind of tax rate they are comfortable with and what services they are comfortable with, having cut at the schools. This will be big time cuts. Obviously, losing an employer to the size of Exelon is a concern for the entire area, said Maroa Forsyth School Superintendent Mike Williams. I do know that we have several families from the Maroa Forsyth School District that are employed there. We would like to wish those families the best of luck as they deal with this difficult time. The true effect on this loss will be determined by the number of families that choose to relocate in order to find employment. We will not know the true effect on Maroa Forsyth for some time, said Williams. Local resident Joe Alexander said he is worried about the ripple effect of losing so many jobs in a town of about 7,000 people. The power plant has been good for the economy of Clinton and DeWitt County, and there's going to be a long-lasting trickle-down effect, which is going to be very tough on this community. The immediate loss of jobs is troubling, but so are the long-term problems, such as what happens to that 5,000-acre lake. Ryan McCrady, president of the Economic Development Corporation of Decatur in Macon County, said it was likely that some workers live in Macon County, as well as McLean, Piatt, and others besides DeWitt. Regionally, he said there would be opportunities for the displaced workers. Richland Community College and Workforce Investment Solutions are among the entities that could help those workers learn new skills to transition. They'll definitely have some good work experience and good skills to bring into play, McCrady said. Sometimes the exact skills you need to move up to another type of industrial manufacturing type of environment requires some specific training, but we have very good partners that will do that for a living. McCrady and the other Decatur-Macon County EDC would prepare to support its counterpart in DeWitt County. If there's any good news, it's that we do have a year to work on this and start seeing what we can do to help, he said. In local news, bike trail progress inches forward, Decatur. Delayed by government requirements, the Decatur Park District continues inching forward toward progress on the next phase of its popular bike trails. The district plans to build a 1.5-mile section of trail from Cresthaven Park to Forsyth, with the ultimate goal of connecting that trail with the section that begins in Fairview Park. Officials previously planned to deal with construction this year. Now they hope for next spring. It's been definitely a long process of trying to get the final approvals to get under construction, so definitely looking forward to that, said Ryan Raleigh, Director of Operations for the district. The project will be 80% funded by the Illinois Transportation Enhancement Program, a state program that administers federal funds. On Wednesday, the district's board voted to accept additional money from the state and authorize more funding for engineers who have been working to overcome various permitting hurdles. It's just a lot of steps, Raleigh said. Going through the state to get the approval from the various departments, you have to start on one path. Once you get that approval, that allows you to do the next thing. For instance, environmental guidelines required the district to show that it would plant trees in place of those that would be taken down during the construction. There were also questions about the proposed path beneath Interstate 72, which required further engineering analysis. New flood maps for the area are also due to be released by the Illinois State Water Survey in October, Raleigh said. The project could then become part of the state bidding process late this year or early 2017. The need for additional work drove up engineering costs, almost double what the district anticipated paying its contractor, Bainbridge, Gee, Milansky & Associates, or Gee, I guess. However, the state allowed the district to apply for additional funding. We were pleasantly surprised to find out that they were actually going to give us more money for this, Raleigh said. The total cost of the project was previously estimated at $1.9 million. It is now expected to reach $2.6 million. K-9 officer gets honor-filled send-off. Decatur. When K-9 Officer Mallow died last month, the Macon County Sheriff's Department lost a valuable member of their unit, and Deputy Timothy Hook lost an important part of his family. Mallow, a Belgian Malinois and veteran of the K-9 Police Street Crime Unit, died May 26th of natural causes. His contribution to the department included apprehending more than 130 suspects, the detection of numerous drugs, weapons and currency seizures, and about 100 assists for other agencies. He was treated like a police officer, Hoke said. He is just one of the guys. To honor their fallen comrade, Macon County Sheriff Department officers conducted a final ride tribute Thursday afternoon. Lieutenant Antonio Brown began the procession with an announcement of the in-service code, or a 1041 code. The line of approximately 35 police vehicles traveled southbound on U.S. 51 from Pershing Road to the Macon County Courthouse. At the final destination, the officer announced a 1042 code over the police radio with a response from the dispatcher representing the end of service. The police departments from the various police departments joined in the procession, including those from Warrensburg, Shelbyville, Mount Zion, Brown County, and Winnebago County. Brown wanted to recognize Mallow for his contribution to the department. "It is our way to give a tribute to him and let the community be part of it also," he said. Stephen Martellaro, a deputy sheriff from Winnebago County, was in Decatur for canine training when he learned of Mallow's death. He had met Hoke and Mallow in January during a training session. "They had a great partnership," he said. "They were an inspiration in seeing what my dog can become," Martellaro said. He has been working with his dog Bullet, hoping to create a police dog with capabilities similar to Mallow's. "He's motivation to get my dog to become that good," he said. During the current 8-week canine training session, Sergeant Roger Dively of Macoupin County Sheriff's Office experienced Mallow's strength and determination firsthand. 2 days before his death, the police dog attacked Dively, who was wearing a protective suit as part of the class. Over a week later, a small injury could still be seen. "His teeth didn't make it through the suit," Dively said, "but he had so much pressure it pinched my skin." The officers understand the importance of Mallow in the police department and in Hook's family. Because of the amount of time spent together, the canine and human officers form a close bond. "The officers work 12-hour shifts together and off-duty time in training. You spend more time with these dogs than you do with your own family," Dively said. Hook admitted most of his police responsibility was given to his partner. "I just showed up with them. He was an exceptional dog. He will be hard to replace," he said. Leaks and noises lead to building inspection for township. With yellow leakage and odd noises above the assessor's employees, the Decatur Township are set to discover the causes and costs of building updates. Township officials gave the go-ahead at Wednesday night's meeting for Supervisor Lisa Stanley to hire a building inspector to look into the township facility at 1620 South Taylorville Road to see what sort of maintenance work needs to be done. "We just want to know what repairs we're looking at here," Stanley said. "Issues have begun to occur in recent months in the second floor of the building, which is shared between the Township's Assessor's Office and Lutheran Child and Family Services. Among the problems is the leakage of some yellow material from a ceiling tile in the Assessor's Office hallway. In addition, employees in the Assessor's Office have reported rustling noises above them, as though an animal is running across ceiling tiles. It got to the point that Assessor Vicki Sheets said that they had a township employee investigate whether there was an animal stuck in the walls or ceiling of the building. The cost of the building inspection has not been determined. Stanley said that she will begin looking into inspectors and their costs in the coming week. The township moved into the 20,000-square-foot building in 2009 and have spent $325,000. Having spent $325,000 in 2007 to purchase the building that was once the home of Carter's Furniture. Another $1.3 million was spent to update the building for office use. The Lutheran Child and Family Services moved into the building in 2011, with the township spending $50,000 to remodel the second floor for office space. In other business, the township is expected to hold a special meeting later this month to determine the health insurance plan. Officials had hoped to hear from a representative from the local government health plan, which is operated by the Illinois Department of Central Management Services, but Stanley said that they had canceled their appearance due to illness. The township is expected to decide between a state's plan, which they switched to last year, and Blue Cross, which is the township previously used. No date has been scheduled for that meeting, though officials stated a desire to have a decision before July 1st. Another month, another goodbye. Commission attorney retires. Decatur. After 61 years of practicing law in Decatur and several decades as legal counsel for the Decatur Public Building Commission, Ed Booth said that he had one plan in mind for his retirement. "I plan on sleeping in on Monday," he said. The 89-year-old attorney stepped down as counsel for the commission during its Thursday morning meeting, ending a tenure that goes back more than 30 years and saw the commission purchase, construct, and maintain facilities like the current Macon County Office Building and the Law Enforcement Center. Booth praised the commission's board of commissioners, saying that they have worked under the radar for years to manage public facilities and to effectively manage taxpayers' money. This may sound extreme, but I have never had the commission or the staff make me wince when I didn't think they should be doing something, Booth said. It's regrettable that there's no way for the public to know what this governmental body does and what good work you've done. The 89-year-old attorney received a standing ovation from those in attendance, and a cake was set aside for a post-meeting celebration of his tenure. Board members took turns praising the work that Booth had done, with Commission Chairman Rick Bright telling Booth during the meeting that he never failed to provide thoughtful insight into matters that came to the board. "I may not always have agreed with you, but you always made the right calls, and I really appreciate all the hard work that you gave to the commission," Bright said. "We are going to miss having you here." It was the second send-off that Booth has received in the past month, and he stepped down as legal counsel for the Decatur Park Board during May meeting. Decatur attorney John Cobb was appointed to the commission's as the commission's new legal counsel. In money, State Farm moves away from Good Neighbor, Bloomington. State Farm is hitting the refresh button on its familiar commercial ad jingle, "Like a Good Neighbor, State Farm is there." On Thursday, the insurance company replaced its brand platform with "Here to Help, Life Go Right." It was slated to be highlighted in new commercials set to air during the first game of the NBA Finals Thursday night. "State Farm has always been there when things go wrong," said Beth Ward, State Farm Assistant Vice President of Marketing. "But what's interesting is people don't always realize the many ways we've been there to help life go right. People know State Farm as a car and homeowner insurer. That Good Neighbor company is always there to help them recover after a car crash, house fire, or natural disaster," Ward said. "And we have been and will be there when things go wrong, but there is so much more. The new marketing campaign is designed to help reflect State Farm's broader services and products beyond just auto and home insurance," added Rand Harbert, State Farm's chief agency sales and marketing officer. State Farm is one of the most iconic and recognizable brands, and today is the day we're starting to hit the refresh button on that brand, Ward told the Pantograph. Since 1971, Like a Good Neighbor, State Farm is there has expressed the brand of the 94-year-old Bloomington-based insurance company. "Being a good neighbor has been and always will be part of the State Farm DNA," said Ward. "While we will continue to use these assets, we're really excited about the opportunity to introduce new approaches to that showcase State Farm in compelling new ways. The company is hoping its new brand platform will spur people to think about State Farm as a company that provides solutions for their lives, not just their stuff, and also beyond insurance," she said. The company has helped provide college fund education and build a retirement nest egg. State Farm also helps research vehicle design, occupant and highway safety, as well as building safety. "For these many of those things, the public just doesn't know about us," Ward said. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review, dated June 3rd, 2016. This is Barbara Ridenour. Please stay tuned.